Okay, that part's done. Well, if you've been with us the last 11 weeks, it's been a fun ride. And, you know, I don't want to say that there's a lot of anticipation on my part built up for this meeting, but I'd be lying if I said there isn't. Because the 11th step is so important to me. It's my whole life. So how do you convey that in 45 minutes? How do I convey how important my relationship with God, my improvement of my relationship with God, how do you convey that in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where there's pressure and there's time and there's sticky notes and there's... It seems more comfortable in here. Richie, did you turn the air down? Thank you so much. Wow. Whew. I was going to say heat, and then I went to feel the heat. There was no heat. So how do you convey that? How do you sum up everything that you've learned over the years you've been in Alcoholics Anonymous and convey it in one message? Well, let me tell you how I hope to do it tonight. I prayed before I came in. And I did the third step prayer. And as Ernie constantly reminds me, I'm the pipe, not the well. And I just go to the well, and I go to the one that dug the well, and I go to the one that fills the well, and I say, please fill me. Help me to show up for your sake. Don't give me victory over my difficulties so that I look good. Give me victory over my difficulties so that you look good. And not that he ever needs any of us to do any speaking for him, but it sure does feel great when we can show up and just get out of the way. So that's what I hope to do tonight. And, you know, someone asked me, why is it that you pray every time before you speak? You pray before you come in the room and then you pray after you come in the room. Because by the time I make my way from the back of the room to the front of the room, I already started taking control. I started saying hello to people. Hey, what's up? Good to see you. No, good to see you. Good to see you. Hey, good to see you. So by the time I've made my way to the forward, I've already gotten in the way. I've already showed up. So then I have to re-pray. And either I used to pray silently before I spoke. And then I started to say, you know what? I'm not going to pray silently before I speak. I'm going to pray the way that they did in Alcoholics Anonymous before there was a big book. I'm going to pray just the way that I would if nobody else was around. And I can't say that's exactly how I pray, because I do have to bring it in a little bit. But it's kind of the way I pray. You know, they have that thing, dance like nobody's watching. I can't do that. I dance with my wife on Fridays. I dance like everybody's watching. I dance like the whole world is watching. It's only me, my wife, Eddie, and Patricia, and Mark, and Maciel, and I dance like everyone's watching, Diane. I mean, I'm the worst Spanish dancing guy you've ever seen in your life. I can't do it. Well, when it comes to prayer and meditation, there's something that switches inside of me. And I really do believe that the Creator, the one that created the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the one that created the programs, the one that created the books that came before the Big Books and the NA text and all those different books, I believe that the Creator not only wants to be with me tonight, not only wants to be with us tonight, but will show up when asked. The Big Book says that God does not make hard terms for those that seek Him. And I want to tell you something, I'm seeking Him. And tonight, I actually need a meeting. Okay, so if you came here, be like, this speaker, tonight, I actually need a meeting. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous tonight because I need a meeting. I got hit with so many different distractions and disappointments. And, you know, I'm sorry that your dad's not here, but life is difficult. The Scott Peck book that we were talking about last week, The Road Less Traveled, that first page is true. Life is difficult. But then what I failed to read and what your dad reminded me is that the next line says, as soon as you can just get that through your head, then you realize that when it is difficult, you're not shocked. And if you go around saying to yourself, you know, life is difficult, and when it's not difficult, it's a blessing, you're not shocked. But if you go around thinking that life is always going to be easy, then when it's difficult, it's shocking. Well, I think today I woke up and I got on my knees and I prayed with my wife. And things were going so great, I think I forgot that this is the real world. Just because I'm sober and I'm happy in the morning before I leave the house with a cup of coffee and before anything else starts, that doesn't mean that's the way the day's going to go. I want to tell you though, something that is amazing that's happened to me over the years is that I really believe in the big book. And I really believe in page 86, 87, and 88. Now, I don't say that to just get a excitement from people. I believe in those three pages. I believe it's a perfect morning meditation, Danny. Have you been reading page 86, 87, and 88? Okay. Because you look tan. You look very tan tonight, and I'm not sure exactly how much reading you've been doing. That's why I answered that question. Very, very tan. I want to read to you why I keep talking about page 86, 87, and 88. I want to read something to you. Last week we were talking about the 10th step, and I promised you that this week we were going to read one of the things that I read sometimes while I'm on my knees, sometimes I'll do it the next day, but I want to read to you when we retire at night. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, self-seeking? Do we owe anybody an amends? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves that should have been discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving towards all? You could stop right there. Right there. Were we kind and loving towards all? Not just the people that like us. To all. Because anyone could be nice to people that like you. If you tell me how great I am and all this kind of stuff, I'm going to be nice to you. But were you kind and loving towards all? Were you kind and loving to the person that cut in front of you on 95? Were you kind and loving to the person that was nasty to you at Publix? Were you kind and loving to the person that had 22 items in the 10 thing, the 10 items or less? Mason does that all the time. Mason thinks if you get two carts and you go in the 10 item or less, you're allowed to bring in 30 items. You can't. Were you kind and loving towards all? What could I have done better? What could I have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? It's a big one for alcoholics, isn't it? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we can do for others? What a great test of our sobriety. Where's Fred? What a great test of our sobriety when we know we're doing stuff for other people just to do it. And here's a great litmus test for your sobriety. Are you doing things for people that are kind that they don't even know about? Or like what I'm guilty of a lot of times, I do something kind for you and then I rent a plane to put it up in the sky. To say, Stevie B bought groceries, or Stevie B took this guy across town. How about kind and loving towards all, thinking about other people, not telling anybody about it? You know what page that's on, guys? That's on page 86. If you're not reading page 86, 87, and 88 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm not taking your inventory, but you're not doing yourself a service. You have the greatest textbook and other textbooks that are out there. But the greatest textbook that is not only an inspired textbook, but it's an inspired textbook by God for people like us. It's the manual for people like us. I don't know about you, but my entire life I always felt different then. Anybody else in this room ever felt different then? I always felt different then. I'd be in a group with four or five guys and they'd be talking about girls and I'd feel like nobody knew what I was talking about. And I'd be in another group of guys and they were talking about sports and I felt nobody understood me. And I'd be in another group of guys and they were talking about work and I felt nobody understood me. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I started reading the big book, and I, for the first time in my life, and I didn't even understand it, I felt like somebody understood me. Somebody that was around 70 years ago, that was a proctologist and a stockbroker, understood me in 1993 when I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This was written in 1939. Joe, how is that possible? How is that possible that two guys in another century ago can understand me today? Because we have the disease of alcoholism. an addiction. And only someone that's been through it, only someone that's afflicted with it, can understand us. That's why when we read this textbook and it says, upon awakening, let us think about the 24 hours a day, and we're going to go into the next part of this, we should be reading this because it just puts us on such an incredible plane. Because the moment I pull my face up from the sheets, I look over my beautiful wife. Sometimes I kiss her at first, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I run downstairs and put the coffee on. And of course I run up the stairs and I kiss her. Get on my knees, do my prayer. Welcome, Lord. Thank you so much for another day. And then guess what happens? Boom. I take over. Hey, Sheila. I take over. And when I take over, I start worrying about me, my little plans and designs. What am I going to do? How am I going to do this? Where the... Beep, 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 beep. The same money that I went to bed with the night before. Usually I wake up with it during the morning. It's not like I have a lot of money where anyone's going to be trying to embezzle anything that I have. So usually when I put my head on the pillow, it's the same money that I have in the morning. And if I go to bed in a spiritual condition, I can feel fine about my finances. If I wake up in the wrong spiritual condition and I don't check it in with God, all of a sudden I became poor overnight. And I have fear of financial insecurity. The same exact situation. The same way that I go to bed at night, I could be waking up in bed. You know, I have all my friends. Everything's in order, John. I feel really good about myself. You know what? People in Alcoholics Anonymous like me. People at work like me. I go to bed. I wake up in the morning. I start to shake myself off. I get down on my knees. I wake up. The world doesn't understand me. I don't understand. And same mind, same circumstances, same person, same house. Same sobriety by one day. Why do I say all this? Because if we get in the way, we could actually get so far into way to not only be discontent and miserable, but it could take you out of it and make you drink. I know that to be a fact because when I picked up my 7-year medallion over at the 12-step house at the 11-step group, I picked up my 7-year medallion, and then 1 week later I was drinking. And I didn't start drinking to drink alcoholically, and I didn't start drinking to take pills on the side. But that's what happened. I had no idea that I would ever do drugs again. It was the farthest thing from my mind. If you had ever said to me when I ordered that glass of Japanese rice wine, and I said to the person, and it wasn't even like I was in a fancy restaurant. I was over on Federal Highway, Joe, getting at the August Moon. You know, $9.95 Chinese food and $4.95 sake rice wine. I threw my sobriety away for $4.95 sake rice wine. And it was in a plastic cup. And you know, you don't have a drink for 7 years, and then that's how you go out. I always saw myself going out like on a highway, you know what I mean? Like James Dean. Instead, I was a plastic spoon in a plastic cup, and I drank it, and I was already out. Next thing you know, I'm out of Alcoholics Anonymous. The old ideas that were exchanged for new were completely new ideas when I started to drink. I thought you guys were, I felt sorry for you, and I thought all the people in AA, they're just so misguided. There is a way to socially drink. I had been doing it for 3 or 4 days. And I thought to myself, all these people, Joe and all these guys that I met along the road, that 20 years and all these fools, and you could socially drink if you really, really kept a lid on it. And you know when I was during those couple months of drinking before I got into the drugs? And Ernie said it to me last week. A true indication of someone that's in a relapse is not what they're putting into their system, but it's also the way they start to feel about other people. You know, the more I drank, and I don't mean in terms of quantity, the more days that I drank, the less I cared about you. My little plans and my designs became all I thought about. I didn't think of sponsees, and I had a bunch of them. I didn't think of my wife who was supporting me, who thought I was having a nervous breakdown. I didn't think about my family or my friends or anything like that. Do you know, I said today was a tough day and I needed a meeting. You know why it was a tough day? It had nothing to do with my life. My wife and I had a perfect day. It was everybody else around me. I'm actually to the point in my life, now I'm not saying this is healthy, I'm like borderline where I'm going to have to get an Al-Anon sponsor. But I'm actually in my life where the people around me really affect me. You know, one of my guys started using today again. It broke my heart. I don't just take it like, oh yeah, no big deal. It's the disease of alcoholism. I don't really care. It's not like that for me to care. I so care. My parents left today. They got in a car and they came over to see us and they kissed us goodbye and they left. And my mom called me today at 6 o'clock tonight. She said to me, Diane, she said goodbye and she's really gonna miss us and she's gonna miss the 11-step group. You know, my mom said, please tell the people in the 11-step group she loves you guys. Not the 11-step group, the 11-step meeting tonight, that she loves you guys and she's gonna miss you guys. You see, my mom's in a program also. She cares. My dad's in the program also. He cares. My sister's in the program also. She cares. So it's not just about the drinking and the drugging. It's about that little sphere of our mind that starts to become totally self-obsessed. Mind, mind, what am I going to do? Mind, 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 mind. While we're doing this review at the end of the night, it does say, and this is that fine line that we have to walk. We have to be careful not to fall into remorse, self-pity, beating ourselves up. We have to be very careful because as alcoholics, it's good to feel that we could do better. But it's really bad to start to get that self-debating, I'm no good, I'm garbage, I can't get out of bed, I don't want to do anything. Because that's as bad as just doing what you want to do. You see, the enemy of our mind uses that kind of stuff. God doesn't want anything that even sounds like that, anything that sounds like you're garbage, anything that you start talking like you're a piece of anything, understand that that does not come from the Father. Because if God the Creator created us, you can understand that He's not using words like you're a piece of garbage. And usually when I start calling myself a piece of garbage, it always has a New York accent. And I know God's probably not exactly from the same part of Long Island that I'm from. So it's usually a good indicator that it's me calling myself a piece of garbage. It's usually a good indicator that I'm self-saying bad stuff about myself. Sometimes it comes in with a Quebec accent. And I, from what I understand, it could be closer to where he's at. So when I start hearing those type of words in my head, I have to be real careful. Then I say the magic prayer for me. And I've shared it with you guys before, but the guys that are visiting from the West Broward Club, is that where you're visiting from? Welcome from so far away. It was so nice to have you. Over here on the east side, you know. I say this prayer. God, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. God, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. Why do I use such a simple prayer to compete with such a complex mind? Because I need something simple, right? To get me to open up that channel. Lord, open up that channel for me. Would you guys do me, anybody that wants to join me on that, will you just close your eyes for a moment? Anyone that wants to join me? And just repeat after me, God, please remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me today. You know what that does? And I say it over and over again until that peace comes over me, that peace beyond our understanding, that peace that just, wow. The peace I was always seeking out in a pill and in a bottle and in a bar. It now comes over me in a prayer. I'm so glad you're with me today. Please remove this bad thought from me. Over the last years, it's never, never let me down. And I've had some thoughts that are completely ridiculous, completely vulgar, completely angry. If you were arrested for your thoughts, take me now. Because some of the thoughts that come out, I'm like, what? I didn't even see that in a movie. How did you even think of that? Because what's in us is not always good. In my life, it's a lot of time not always good. So what I want to do is I want to open up to the channel to the one that's good all the time. And I want to make sure that I can just turn it over to Him. And I do. Now that gets us to the second part, upon awakening, which is my favorite. While you're rolling your eyes, Marissa. Upon awakening. Let us think about the 24 hours a day ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. This is such a great paragraph. Who reads this paragraph? This is the best paragraph in the morning. It's so amazing. If you don't get it, open it up, get it. You don't even have to be an alcoholic to have this affect your life. I see a lot of people that aren't alcoholics in here. I know my wife is not an alcoholic. I know I have moms that are here that are not alcoholic. Get the book. Open this up. Or print out this page from Google it. Google it. Page 86, big book. Boom, it opens up. Better yet, buy the book from Richie. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially ask that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties, for after all, God gave us these brains to use. What are we doing by starting off our day like that? We're just giving Him our day. God, take our 24 hours. Just take it right now. Now, it sounds like all like rose-colored glasses, and it's real easy, and that sounds real nice in the meaning of Alcoholics Anonymous, Steve, but how does this apply in my life? Well, let me go to the following page, because you're going to love it. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. Anyone face indecision in here during the day? I faced indecision 12 times while I was coming across just to the podium tonight. From the back of the room to the front of the room, I faced indecision. Who to say hello to? Should I be here? It's too hot. Should I tell anybody? How much to put in the basket? $2, $3. Maybe someone's looking. Maybe I should put $6. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. How many people would like to just, when faced with indecision, would just like to relax and take it easy? You know what I'm going to do with that indecision, John? I'm going to relax and I'm going to take it easy. Now you see why I need the other prayer? Please, God, remove this bad thought from me. I'm so glad you're with me. Because it's very rare that I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to relax and take it easy. You got it, God. You created it. You fix it. I'll be fine with the outcome. That's perfect, right? It doesn't work that way for me. Not yet. The Bill W. said that the next frontier is emotional sobriety. I haven't found the next frontier yet. I'm still working towards that. I think we all are. I don't think it has anything to do with the amount of years you have. And let me talk to you about improving our conscious contact with God. Improving our conscious contact with God means we're going to have to do some work. It doesn't mean about the amount of sobriety you have. Although the people in here with double digits and triple digits and all that, after that, what comes after triple digits? Quadruple digits? Yeah. Tony, you're coming up on quadruple digits. You can't even say that. You have to say 40 plus. That's much easier. Quadruple digits. It doesn't have anything to do with the length of time sobriety, or it could. But the two are not, it's not an exact equation. Because thinking that you're going to become emotionally sober or have a closer contact with God because of the amount of years you're sober is like putting your car in a garage and parking it there and having nobody do any service work and thinking that it's getting a great tune-up just because it was left there for a week. It's actually going to need to be worked on. This improving our conscious contact with God, it actually takes a lot of work. It's a proactive approach. I've met some people, and I know you have also, that you know, you think they're newcomers. You're like, hey, welcome to the program. It's so good to see you. I see you all fidgety. You're angry. You're miserable. I got 36 years. So you're improving on that conscious contact. Improving on our conscious contact means stepping out of the box. I want to read something to you that was so powerful to me today. Andy, this is why I asked you to come to me. I read this last night, and I was like, this is for my Andy. Awesome. You know, who goes back to the spiritual experience in the book? I never go back to the spiritual experience in the book, unless I'm in a big book study. But as I was preparing for this, God wanted me to go back to the spiritual experience of the book, and I told him is I'm not even in that part of the book, God. He's like, oh, yes, you are tonight. We're in... Oh, that's why, because it's not the spiritual part. It's there is a solution. This guy, Roland Hazard, went to go see this, you know, world-famous Carl Jung, who was the Freud of that time. Or maybe he was the Carl Jung of that time, but he was big. He was very big. And he went and he went to go speak to this guy, and he went to go study under him, and he went to go train under him. He went to go have his mind, his inner workings of his mind, looked over and dissected, and like what we do in treatment centers today. We have some of the greatest psychologists, psychiatrists, treatment directors, treatment facility people, counselors, people who have been in school forever, PhDs, and all these different things. And yet it turns out that the only thing that can produce a vital change in our lives is actually a vital spiritual, not just an experience according to him, it's going to be a displacement of old ideas for new. You see, the reason you're in this room, there's 150 people, the reason you only got 10 guys and gals in here that are over 20 years, and you have another 100 that are under, is not because there's so many more newcomers today, it's because they don't stay. They don't stay because they think that coming to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and staying in Alcoholics Anonymous and doing some work in Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever program you're in is actually going to ensure a vital spiritual experience, and it's absolutely not true. The vital experience that they're talking about takes so much work, good work, so much vigilance, good vigilance, so much capability to change that you actually have to come into Alcoholics Anonymous, or even if you're at tonight, and just leave your ideas. And I don't care how many years you have today. If you're sitting here with 15 going, I got 15, but you're miserable inside, leave the ideas tonight and understand that major changes need to be made in your life. And go seek someone who's not afraid to tell you that, you know what, it's time to make some major changes. Because I've seen some men. Our sponsor, Russell, started to kick his program in at 16 years. He was restless, irritable, and discontent at 16 years. And then he went from track A to track B and changed his life. He didn't change his life. He changed his life. He changed his life. So listen what he says to them. The doctor said, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I have never seen one case, not one single case, ever recover what the amount of state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you. You know who he was talking about? Us. Us. Anybody in here ever, and I don't mean the people that are married to us. I'm talking about the other people. Anybody in here ever would have done anything for the next whatever it is that they took, would have done anything? I would have. I would have. I remember one time my wife came home and I had a knife. And I tell this story, I had a knife to my chest. And she called my parents, and they ran over to the house. And they said, what's wrong with you? What's wrong with you? And I was supposed to have had 2 weeks. And the whole time that I was doing that, I was thinking to myself, this is what I was thinking. When my wife and my parents, and they were crying, and I had this knife to my neck, I was thinking to myself, if I sneak out of the back of the house and run due west across the train tracks, I know I can probably cop one of my pieces of jewelry for stuff. So if you think that when they were talking to Roland Hazard, they're only talking about the Bowery bums, I was a Bowery bum. Except mine came from super alcohol. Mine came from dry goods also. I'm you know what I do? Anything you offer me. Yeah. Yes. You know what I say? Okay, that's good. I'll take that. Did it start to heat up in here? It's so hot in here. Ah! They invented this thing called air conditioning in the 60s. It was awesome. And he said to him, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've never seen ever one case recover. And our friends felt as though the gates of hell had closed on him with a clang. Just by a show of hands, I know you asked a couple times tonight already, anybody ever felt like the gates of hell closed behind them with a clang? I definitely have. I know exactly what that feels like. I know exactly what that feels like. And I've been around some of my friends inside this room, and I've seen them look like that also. He tells them that I have never even seen one single case recover with people like you. And he felt like the gates of hell had closed behind them with a clang. He said to the doctor, is there no exception? Is there no exception? As only a dying man will say. Yes, replied the doctor. There is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have what we call vital spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements. This is what the doctor said. Here and there, once in a while, there has been like a guy across the world. He stayed sober because of huge emotional displacements. Does that sound anything like our program today? Where are you going tonight? Well, I heard there was a good speaker in town, but I heard his story before. He's so boring. Well, what are you going to do? Well, I was going to watch TV. Or I was going to go to a game. You understand why there's only six people inside this room that have 20 plus years or 30 plus years out of all the people inside here? Because it takes huge emotional displacements. It takes vital spiritual experiences. But nobody talks about that. You know what the popular thing now they talk about? Just don't drink and go to meetings. Don't drink it and go to meetings. It's like taking a car, bringing it over to the garage, leaving it there, coming back 3 years later, and wondering why the thing don't run. That's don't drink and go to meetings. Now, does it mean that to people that just don't drink and go to meetings, does it sometimes catches? Yeah, it sometimes catches. It sometimes works. But you know the ones that I see that really works is the ones like in my life. The ones that made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God on a daily basis. Those are the ones I see really work. Those are the ones I see that were in a treatment center a little over 8 years ago. That was so miserable, discontent, that I had a fist fight 3 times inside the treatment center, and they threw me out. And I smoked other than alcohol while I was in that treatment center. Then I had a near-fatal car accident going southbound on a northbound lane on Golden Beach Boulevard, over there where you live, Joe, over there in that area. And I had 6 felonies in one car accident. My wife then puts me in another detox and I use after that. And I can't stay sober. And everybody gives up on me. And I'm in the Fort Lauderdale Hospital on the 3rd floor, completely done. And I say to, and I thought I was an agnostic. I told people I was an agnostic. Turns out I was in an ignoramus, really. I had the words confused. I said I was an agnostic. They said, no, you're an ignoramus. I said, I'm Steve, I'm an ignoramus. And the guy says to me, you want to keep living like this? This was my 4th time in the Fort Lauderdale Hospital in 3 months. You want to keep living like this? I said, I don't know how anybody wants to live. I want to get high so bad, I don't know what to do with myself. And then Vernon says to me over at Transitions, and then what? Vernon says to me, and then what? I go, what do you mean, and then what? I want to get high so bad, I can taste it. Every fiber, everything in my body, all I can do is think about it. And he goes, and then what? You want to find out where a person's at? You say to them, and then what? I want to kill myself, and then what? No, did you hear what they did? And then what? Man, that cussed it. Vernon said to me, I said, I'll do anything to get high. He said, and then what? And then I realized, there really is not enough anything in this world for me to be saturated with. I've never had enough. So I'm going to need a vital spiritual experience. And you know what you need for a vital spiritual experience? You need to beg God. Whether you believe in Him or not, He told me. What do you mean whether I believe in Him or not? How can I believe something that I don't believe in to give me a vital spiritual experience to keep me from using it? Because you got no other choice, Steve. And then what? But what if this thing isn't true? Then you'll continue to want to get high. So I call up my sponsor from the 3rd floor where I was living over there at those apartments. And I hated my roommates. And I called back, I called them in California. I said to them, listen, Jerry, I want to get high so bad I can taste it. And you know what he tells me? How's the praying on your knees that I told you in the morning and at night? How's that going for you? I said, Jerry, listen to me. I want to get high so bad I don't know what to do with myself. I'm telling you, all I can see is getting high. You see, when you want to get high more than anything else in the world, everything seems like a great opportunity. Every breath, in between the breath, you think you can actually sneak one. You're like, maybe nobody saw that breath. You know, maybe I can sneak one in there. Every symbol, I wanted to take a drink at every single turn. We went to, there was this club called the Boulevard Club in North Miami. And And it looked like there would be, it looked like an area that I could get stuff in. Like, so I used to like leave the meeting and say, I need air. You know, I need to get some air. It's like on a road that looks like you can get stuff at all times. And I'd be just standing out there just praying like someone would throw a bag of stuff at me as they were driving by. Like in the meeting of an AA meeting, I'm just standing out there. I'm like, I wasn't praying, but I'm like, I know if someone could just throw a bag of stuff at me like while they're driving by. When you're in that frame of mind, when that's all you think about, and then someone says to you, get down on your knees and ask God to keep you sober. You know what? Frankie, you know what I mean. You know why sometimes you say, I'm going to give that a shot. Because sitting outside of AA meetings and hoping that a bag of dope falls from the sky is no way to live. And you know what? You can't go anywhere in life like that. You know what? My wife wasn't not going to put up with that. And then the lady in the treatment center, her mother used to come visit her at the family group. She's a counselor now over at Recovery Place. What's her name? I forget her. Amber. Amber's mother says to me, you need a halfway house. I said to her, now I had been in a halfway house when I was 23. I came into the program when I was 23. I'm now 32. I got a house in Hollywood with my wife. And it's a full house, I told her. I live in a full house. She's like, you need a halfway house. I said, I live in Hollywood with my wife. It's a full house. I'll be fine. She says, no, Steve, you need a halfway house. I drove out of there in my red Lincoln Navigator and my wallet with credit cards, and I drove up to, when I saw her next, when I was living in a halfway house with nothing, broke, no wallet, no house, my wife served me with a restraining order, I was living with these guys. They were right. Not only did I need to surrender, but I needed to surrender to something other than me. You see, my best thinking was always like, how can I get over? And you know, Paulie tells this amazing story, and it actually happened to me today. You know, we're going to be the last to know when we use. Now, I'm looking over a room that are people that are very sober. I understand that this is not something that goes on in most of our lives every day. I see people with many, many years of sobriety. But let me tell you something. When I started drinking at 7 years of sobriety, I never thought I would use either. I was the last to know. I thought it would never happen again. So it's not always like you're going to get a big flag in your life and they're going to say, you know what, Mary, today it looks like you're going to use. So most of the time, we're the last person to know. Most of the time, it comes in like an idea like, you know what? A nice wine cooler would be good after you cut the lawn. Who drinks a wine cooler even today? But your mind will tell you that a wine cooler is not alcohol. Because it's got to try every little way in and out. And when I was, one time my grandfather came over to my house, and this is a very sad part of my story. And those that have heard my story know it. And he says to me, this is 10 years ago, he says to me, you're high. And I said to Mike, now, in my mind, I wasn't high because I hadn't been using my drug of choice. So anytime I would like use stuff that wasn't like the top tier, whatever I was getting with that moment, I thought to myself, I'm actually sober. You know, I'd be drinking, but if I like whiskey and I was drinking beer, I thought to myself, I'm sober. I don't know if anybody has that type of junkie reasoning, but I always had that junkie reasoning. I'd be drinking wine, but I really want something else, and I'd be like, no, I'm sober. I'm just drinking wine. So my grandfather says to me, they're knocking on the door, and they want to take us to somewhere, my wife and I. And he says to me, you're high. And I had been using something the night before. But it was not like really hard stuff. It was like stuff you get, you know, like when you hurt your toe or something. So I was like, I'm not high. And he's like, you're high. I'm like, I'm not high. And when I told him I was not high, I truthfully, hand on my heart, believed I was sober. Because I really wasn't high. No, I wasn't drunk high. I wasn't like falling down and drooling high. I was just like sleepy. I took one too many of the things the night before high. And that's not like high. And so why do I even explain that to you? Why did I even bring that up? Because let me tell you something. You're not even going to know if you're not even going to know the truth. You're going to be the last to know. Ernie, how many times have we seen people come and say, I'm sober. Do a pee test. I'm not that sober. You know what I'm saying? I keep one in my car at all times. All times. Being friends with Mason, I drop them all the time.
Just joking, baby. We do it to each other all the time.
So listen to this. They appear to be of the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements. Ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding force of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. You think that just comes? Like he said that once in a while, in a great, that a whole new set of ideas, it comes over them? Guess where it all comes from? With many individuals, the methods which I employed are successful, but I have never, not once, been successful with an alcoholic of your description. Now, for me, I believe that there was a time in this country when meetings were not in every single corner and every single day in so many different places and so many great treatment centers, and people were actually desperate when they came in. Because whether it is that maybe they waited longer, or I'm not sure exactly how it works, and I'm sure you guys that are in the field could explain it to me, but I don't get it. But people to me that come in today don't seem to be as this desperate. But I was one of these people that was this desperate. So when my sponsor said to me, you need to get on your knees and you need to pray, I said to him, I will do exactly that. And then I started to develop this conscious contact, but I didn't even know what the conscious contact was. And I got going through the steps, but I'm not even at the 11th step. I'm starting to pray, I'm starting to pray, I'm starting to pray. Someone invites us to go to church. We go to church with them. I hadn't been into church in my adult life except to marry my beautiful wife years before. But we went on this, she says to me, listen, we're going to go to this church. We got invited to go here, and it's going to be like a date in my mind. You know what I mean? I already figured I'm closing the deal later on. This is our first date. I'm living in a halfway house. I'm sleeping on a little tiny mattress. I'm going to start to talk to her in the church. I'm like, listen, baby, I've changed. You know, do you need to take me back to the house? I'm not going back to live with Mason and Todd anymore. You know, this is I figure I'm going to start running the alcoholic. All I need to do is get her in a church, like a setting like a church. That's my in. You know, I got 3 months of sobriety. I'm going to be hit. You know, sweetheart, you don't understand. There's bed bugs. There's beetles in the backyard. The mattresses stink. You know, I'm just going to give it all. I'm going to give everything that I know. I'm going to give her every junky reason why I need to come home. And something happens when I'm in church. And I'm not saying that everybody needs to go to church. I'm just saying what happened to me. And something that day started to switch inside me. And I realized there's something so much bigger than me. And I didn't ask her if I could come home. And I said to her, can we come back here next week for our second date? Yeah. And we go to our second date at church. Now, the good news is our church has a restaurant. So that's a good thing for me, because we could like make church and then go to a restaurant. And I always like to combine stuff with food. So we start going, and about 9 months later, I'm finally starting to improve my conscious contact with God. I'm out in California with my wife. My grandmother had just passed away the month before. Todd and I were going out to California, and that week my grandmother passes away, then my best friend passes away. Mason and Todd and Eddie helped me through that. I'm 9 months sober, I'm in California, and I say to my wife, because I started to develop this relationship with God in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then I started to do stuff outside of Alcoholics Anonymous, which for me, and it says that we're quick to see where religious people were right, for me, it had to do with church. And I say to my wife, in the middle of California, it was Sunday, and it was my birthday, and we were heading down the coast. Well, not the coast, but we're heading down from Sacramento to go. Veronica, you're going to like this story. We were heading down Sacramento to go to this great brunch. Everything in my life has to do with food and brunches and, you know, everything. That's why I love Passover, because it's just a great meal. And my wife says to me, you know what I'm missing, Steve? I'm missing that we don't hear our pastor here in California. You know, that's what I'm missing. We didn't get to go to church that day. And I said to her, sweetheart, I miss it too. She said, but this has been the most perfect week. We were just getting back together in our relationship. And I said, it has been the most perfect week. And I'm in a rental car, and I have never used the radio in that rental car. And I turn on the radio in that rental car. And it turns out that the pastor of our church down here in South Florida happens to be visiting in the church there in this little town between Sacramento and San Francisco. And I turn on the radio in this rental car, and our pastor from down here is preaching. Now, the reason I tell you that is because God is not looking to hide from any of us. Not only don't we need to know who He is, but anyone that has already figured out who God is, I don't want your God. If any of these alcoholics and addicts inside this room can create a God, I'm not praying to yours. Because the same one that created all this confusion, I don't want him creating any God. I want to get the guy that's out there already. And for me, I have to make sure that the guy that used to say, yeah, Steve, it's okay to do drinking, and it's okay to do drugging, and it's okay to do hurting, and it's okay to do stealing. I got to make sure that guy never comes back and takes control again. I got to make sure that the creator of the universe takes control. And because I continue to get in the way all the time, you see, there's just not enough time in these meetings. I got to 2 post-its. I got to 2 post-its. I had 16 more post-its to go before I even got to the finale. But because I continue to get in the way all the time, I try to live my life by the 11th step prayer. Because the 11th step prayer is just a wonderful, wonderful way to live our lives. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I bring love. That where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. That where there is discord, I may bring harmony. That where there is error, I may bring truth. That where there is doubt, I may bring faith. That where there is despair, I may bring hope. That where there are shadows, I may bring light. That where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I seek to comfort rather than to be comforted, to understand rather than to be understood. Let me just say that one again. To understand rather than to be understood. To love rather than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, and it is by forgiving that one is forgiven. And it is by dying to oneself that one awakens to eternal life. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Steve. We are out of time, but there is always time for a burning desire. This means if you intend to harm yourself or others, pick up a drink, please share it now.
Thank you, Joanne.
Anyone with a burning desire? If you have any questions which remain unanswered, please introduce yourself to